Hello, fellow travelers and adventurers. Welcome to the Overland Trail Guides podcast. My name is Ben. I'll be your host. This is episode 008. We're going to be talking about the Plumas Backcountry Discovery Trail in California. A little bit about Overland Trail Guides. You can find us online at www.overlandtrailguides.com. We have thousands of miles of curated overland routes. We talk about those routes in this particular show to kind of give you a firsthand experience of what you can expect on the route. The best way to support us, go to our website and either buy one of those routes or subscribe to us. Or if you don't have a need for a subscription, but you like what you're hearing today, we do have a Patreon. You can check that in the link as well. And of course, be sure to hit that subscribe button, whether you're listening on iTunes, Spotify, or if you find us on YouTube. So let's talk about the Plumas Backcountry Discovery Trail. It's based in the Plumas National Forest in the Northern Sierra, north of Lake Tahoe. It's about 167 miles long, and we recommend putting about 3 to 4 days to do the route. The recommended season is June through November, but the best way to check is calling the Plumas National Forest. If it's a heavy snow year, you might not be able to run it till July, and in some years, you could potentially even run it into December if snow is coming later. As far as the technical rating goes, it's pretty much all green except for the Poker Flat section. And we talked to our guest, Daniel, here. He'll be able to kind of talk about that a little bit more. Poker Flat, you definitely need a legitimate 4x4, a 4Runner, a Jeep, something like that will get you through there. And then the typical terrain, for the most part, like most backcountry discovery trails, unless you take the alternative routes, it tends to be wide dirt forest roads. There are some narrow sections. We'll talk about some pinstriping that I know our guest went through exploring the trail. And then we kind of talked about a recommended vehicle, basically a 4x4. If you have a lift or larger tires, that's definitely going to help on the Poker Flat section. You can definitely skip that section and start in La Porte if you like. And then as far as adventure vans go, we'll have Daniel talk a little bit about that since I know there's some tight sections. I think you could probably do the entire trail in a Sprinter 4x4. You're probably just going to get some pinstriping and you'd probably need to avoid a Poker Flat unless you want to get winched out of there or something like that. But without further ado, we have Daniel Dempsey, the Overland Family Man. Great to have you on the show, Dan.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, what you're driving, what's going on with you, the YouTube channel.
Right on. So, my name is Dan, Overland Family Man, because I cruise around with my wife, who's into overlanding as well, camping and the outdoors, and then my two young daughters and my dog. I pack us all into a JK Rubicon that we've built out for overlanding. We've bought it new in 16. Before that, I rocked a 92 E350 Quigley van, which, yeah, that thing, I still use it. I use it every day now for work. But I've been running around in that thing since the term overland was coined. You know, I bought that thing in 2010, I think, and I used it to explore, Mendocino National Forest and all that stuff. And going back as a kid, me and my dad used to do a lot of camping, and we would jump sites every day. And I guess, you know, I qualify overlanding as you got camping and you got overlanding, right? My qualifier for overlanding is more than a night, and you jump sites at least once, right? Otherwise, yeah. You're just camping. Otherwise, it's camping, which is fine. I go camping too. I mean, there's nothing. It's all camping, right? But me and my dad used to do the same thing. We'd go up into the Sierras. So I mean, I've been doing this. The outdoors have been my thing. I've always been my thing. So since the, you know, 80s, you know, I've been running around. So that's kind of my history. I'm most familiar with Mendocino National Forest, and I would say, I've done the Rubicon a number of times. I've done the Fordyce Trail. So I've done actual rock crawling, wheeling.
Some wheeling, yep.
And so I'm familiar with, I've done, I don't know, Fordyce half a dozen times. I've done the Rubicon half a dozen times. So I'm familiar with Desolation Wilderness, Tahoe National Forest. I'm pretty familiar with those areas. So Plumas was new for me. And we touched on about 2/3 of the Lassen II in one day, one trip. It was 8 nights, I think, that we went up and out.
Oh, wow.
I actually started kind of building the Jeep for this thing because I was kind of, I never realized you know, for what it's worth, I never was really like YouTubing this kind of thing. I always just went and did it on my own. And then, you know, as soon as I kind of tapped into the YouTube thing, I was like, oh, this is a thing. Like, you know, and people are building out Jeeps to do, you know, so this year I got the roof rack and the whole nine yards on the Jeep so that nice. I could actually get family in it. Cause we've just been packing it to the gills and going for it. And now we have a little bit better. So, and with the van, I could just, you know, I could take three pit bulls, you know, three families, you know, chickens and a couple of bales of hay, and we could go anywhere we wanted to in that thing. So, that's kind of how
I do find it ironic. You did have the van. I don't know if you were a bachelor then, but you didn't have the two kids, right?
Yeah.
Cause I know those Jeeps, they're rad and they're capable, but they don't have a ton of space in them.
They don't. No, you definitely have to compensate for the space with things like, you know, we use a ground tent so that we can utilize the roof rack and stuff like that. So the roof rack was actually new for us this year. That was, and after the season was kind of over. So we've only taken one trip with it so far, and it's a game changer. I'm stoked. Yeah, the van was from a previous life. You know, I lived kind of an outlaw lifestyle for a while. So I did spend a lot of time in the woods in that van up on property. You know, I lived out of it for several months out of the year. That's why I went big. I always wanted a big black 4x4 van. And yeah, I love that stupid thing.
I mean, I would love to have an E350 Econoline or have Sportsmobile, just put the works in, but that's like a house in Arizona, man.
They're big money. Yeah. I looked at buying a new one, even just simple like mine is. Mine's not set up as a camper. It's basically a cargo van. You know, $200,000 for a new one is pretty steep hill to climb. Yeah.
Even so you mentioned that this was kind of your first time exploring kind of outside of, you know, Mendocino National Forest, kind of the Tahoe National Forest. Had you been up to like the Northern Sierra and that area before? Or was this all new to you?
I've been up in Lassen. Me and my dad have done Lassen a few times as a kid, but it was like as an adult, you know, it was definitely new territory. I didn't recognize much.
Yeah, and then I watched your videos. You did a really great job, I think, of calling out the discovery points and going and checking them out. Everything. So you had the guide out, because the National Forest actually has like a 30 plus page guide that's actually really good. As long as you're great at following paper maps. You know, I like having the digital one because you can see exactly where you are. But that guide is actually pretty cool.
Yeah, the Plumas guide's great. I think the Lassen guide could use a little bit more work, but they're both great frameworks. Well, and you could use just that and go for it. You know, and there's markers, you know, along the way, more or less. There's a couple areas in Plumas, I would say, when you kind of approach the Butterfly Valley area, when you're coming up from, you cross a paved road at one point, and when you come up from that paved road going south to north, you could get a little turned around in that area because there's a lot of this and that going on the trails without markers. But even so, you know, the area is not too confusing. Like, you could do it with a paper. If you're halfway savvy with a paper map, it'd be fine.
Totally. And so what kind of inspired you guys to go out and do the Plumas and the Lassen Backcountry Discovery Trail, since you'd never done them before?
You know, I don't remember. I think my wife was the one that said she wanted to go check out Plumas and Lassen. So I Googled it. I actually found you. I think maybe you did a podcast on it before. And am I correct?
No, we haven't done either of those before. No.
Oh, I definitely found your website, and I studied your guide, and, you know, there wasn't really any content to be spoken of. I think at this point, I'm kind of the only one that put out day 1, 2, 3, 4 of this is kind of what you can expect. I haven't seen anybody else do it yet. So I was kind of like excited to do that. But it was really just my wife kind of said she wanted to go check out Plumas, check out Lassen. And so I Googled it. Backcountry Discovery Trail. I was like, that looks like a great framework that takes a lot of the research out of it, you know?
So I've been mountain biking up in the Downeyville area for probably about 10 years now. Not as much lately. And it's crazy. I was up in the Gold Lake and Lakes Basin area, kind of in the general region, and did part of the BDT. And it is just insane, at least when we were in the Gold Lakes area, how many more people are up there now. Like part of it's COVID, but like it's totally been discovered too. Like we would be in Lakes Basin before in the middle of summer, plenty of campsites around, but like now there's just like people everywhere up there. They're like, I guess the secret's out.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The secret's definitely out.
I was going to say, but the flip side is you drive some of those trails in the backcountry, and there was definitely stretches 10, 15 miles at a time. We didn't see anybody.
Yeah. Most people, that's kind of the same case with Mendocino National Forest too. Most folks go to, it's just blown out. It used to be, you could go there on a weekend. Our mutual friend, Dylan Pankow, points out a lot of really great spots. And one spot in particular, he calls it like the Eel River spot. That used to be, you could go get that on a Friday
is
night.
Is that on M6?
M6, yeah. Yep. Now you're lucky. I've been there in the middle of the week and it's really? Taken, which is unreal. Oh, yeah. Wow. So like people have definitely discovered the outward. We've talked about Usel Beach too. Like that's just completely blown out now totally. Too. That used to be a similar situation. Like locals knew about it and that was kind of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. People figured it out.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, they're rad places. So I understand why people love going there. But yeah, let's talk about your experience.
That being said,
yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, that being said, when we were up, for example, up at Hat Creek, not to put the cart before the horse, but like Hat Creek's always been kind of a popular fishing destination. There's a ton of people around and all of the low to the road dispersed camping sites. But if you're willing to just get a couple scratches on the side of your vehicle and maybe go over a couple bumps, you can still escape people, but you just got to be a little bit more adventurous.
Yeah. 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 And like Mendo is relatively close to the Bay Area. But if you go up to Six Rivers or Shasta Trinity, it's pretty easy to get away from people up there. You just got to drive another hour or two.
That's right. I mean, in my videos, I like to drop coordinates, but I also like you said, I point out discovery points and things like that, but I don't point out everything because that's done intentionally also because I forget to film stuff, but I'll just say, to save my own skin, it's done intentionally so that people can discover some stuff on their own. Right.
Absolutely.
And I try not to call out, like, if I'm thinking like all my good spots, like I'm not putting those on blast. You know what I mean? Like I will take you there, but like, I've got spots that people just still don't know about that are epic, even in Mendocino National Forest, I can go take you on Memorial Day weekend camping right next to water with nobody around.
All right. We might have to make a date. We'll figure it out. Yeah. And I definitely keep some stuff under wraps too. There's those special spots that, they're just going to remain secret until you find it. But let's talk about the Plumas BDT. So you guys started on Saddleback Road, which is what, off the 49 in the Downeyville area, right?
That's right. Yeah. So we, if I'm going to go over it step by step. So we decided we had a hair. We didn't want to wait till morning. So we left after work on a Friday night and we shot up to Downeyville. We're just like, we'll find a spot somewhere. So we ended up getting out there at about 2 a.m. in my first video. It was early, the kids were passed out in the car. It was there in the Jeep. And we found a spot where we could pull off. I'd say, I don't know how far from the Saddleback Mountain lookout. We were probably 15 minutes south of that. We just kind of pulled off. I dubbed that spot Camp Meat Bee because we woke up in the morning to be like hornets and stuff buzzing around our heads. So apparently we camped on a nest because they were pissed. So from there, that's what we did. So we went from, Downeyville. We took the whole length of the Plumas, including the optional route. And it was great.
I think we were actually up there around the same time. Was the road up to Saddleback, the lookout open or was it gated off?
It was closed.
It was closed when we were up there too. And so I think one of the cool things about this particular BDT is that it is like the heart of gold country in the Sierra. There's so many remnants, old ghost towns. Do you want to talk a little bit about like some of the things that you might see along the way, whether, it's old mining equipment, ghost towns, all of the plaster mining and everything else there?
Yeah, it's littered with history up there. You start seeing mines as early as like the optional route on Saddleback Mountain. You're passing mines within minutes. Some of them still active claims. Some of them are dead claims. Some of them are 150 years old, you know, all throughout that whole route. I mean, all through the Sierras, right? You're going to get that top to bottom. They're mining something at some point. But it is pretty amazing, the history that's out there, especially when you get into, what's that first ghost town there? Well, Poker Flat, right? You start seeing
Howland Flat.
Howland Flat, the cemeteries and stuff like that are really just
kind of creepy.
Yeah, it is, but it's also, for me, it was very, like a very reflective moment, you know, like these were straight up pioneers, you know, buried there. So it's pretty amazing to pass through and be able to witness these areas that were, you know, civilized areas in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at like, I forget what the populations are because there were a number of boom towns up there, but I think Howland Flat had like at least like 1500 people, if not more. So they had post offices, saloons, houses of, you know, multiple houses of ill repute. And there were these little towns all over the Sierra. And it's just crazy to think you look up there now and there's just a cemetery, some remnants of some old buildings and sheds. But before there were probably hundreds of houses up there.
Well, some of those people's like died there too. You know, they were there until the 1900s, you know, it's wild. And I would imagine folks that even moved away, maybe went and were buried next to their loved ones after the fact, because Howland Flat Cemetery's got, you know, got graves up into the 1920s and 30s. So it's wild. There were towns, big towns.
Yeah. And so you drive up Saddleback Road. I forget the exact route because I've actually driven this section there. And then you make your way over to Howland Flat. And did you
Howland Flat's sure. It's after the poker flat 4x4, like the what do you call it? The OHV section.
Yeah. So I went in a different way. I have to look at the way that I came, but you did the entire Poker Flat OHV. Like you went to where the town of Poker Flat was, right?
Yeah. So that was kind of our official start, right? So we came down Saddleback Road. We stopped. There's a creek there. I forget the name of the creek. We crossed it. We had breakfast there because we didn't have wasps buzzing around our head. And then from there, we took off up the OHV section. On that note,
That's a pretty good trail, right?
Yeah, it's okay. You know, I mean,
compared to Fordyce and Rubicon, it's nothing, but know, for the overlanding contingent, I rate that as a moderate trail.
For stock for overlanding, for sure. Yeah. If you're running just a stock 4x4, you can do it. If you're depending on how stock you are, it may feel more hairy than it is for like a rig like mine or something maybe that's a little bit more built up.
Yeah.
But I saw like bone stock, I think like a Nissan Xterra came through there when we were having breakfast and, you know, they weren't busted down on the trail. It's not that crazy. There's nothing out there going to bust open your differential or, I mean, maybe, but probably not if you know what you're even halfway know what you're doing. Yeah. Nothing's going to bust your oil pan open. You know, it's not too crazy, but 4x4 for sure. You don't want to go out there. I mean, a Subaru would really struggle.
No,
Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's that. So where we picked up Poker Flat was after Howland Flat. And for the most part, that trail isn't too bad, except there was, I think there was one creek crossing that has a big rock and it's kind of off camber. And I'm in a Land Cruiser. So mine is significantly wider than yours. And we had to stack some rocks just because I was a little bit worried I was going to get off camber and fall down into the creek, basically.
Yeah, and a Land Cruiser, you got nothing to worry about. Dude, those things do just fine. But yeah, that creek, I think that's the same creek where we were coming. That's right after Poker Flat. If you were coming from the north or from the
this
south,
this is from Howland Flat. It's kind of what I would call the second half of Poker Flat. So most of it's not that bad, and then it kind of goes through one gully that's not that bad, and then there's a second gully that's another creek, and it kind of has this little rock and just this little on the left hand side. It's a little carved out.
Oh, could be. Yeah.
I've seen Jeeps and 4Runners go up it like no problem, but you're like 6 inches narrower than I am. So this, that extra 6 inches puts me a little out.
Sure.
But Howland Flat, that's a cool spot.
It was a highlight for sure. Yep.
Yeah. And then, so that was like, I guess for you, kind of day one on the trail.
Yeah, that was day one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were seeing quite a few people because Poker Flat's a popular day trip for a lot of people within 100 miles. You can just go. It's a trail that you could shoot in a day and go back home, and it's you're probably not going to break. You know, it's just got, and it's beautiful. You know, there's a lot to see. There was a couple of those Polaris Razor type rigs running around, so we saw a fair amount of people, probably 12 vehicles, I would say, plus minus, that were kind of passing through that area. And then from there, we headed through that to La Porte, where you kind of head back east. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the beginning of the actual backcountry discovery trail and the snowmobile warming hut and all of that stuff. And we stopped shortly after that. Our kids have a bandwidth and they're little, so their bandwidth kind of was running out at that point. And mm-hmm. we prefer to get to camp before dark so we can set up and cook and kind of enjoy ourselves a little bit in the daylight. So we stopped at a pretty cool little spot. It's in my video. I marked it for people, Duck Soup Pond. That was a nice little spot to stop for the night. It was big enough for a couple vehicles to fit. There was nobody around, beautiful scenery. So that was day one of our trip.
Rad. Yeah. Yeah. I've been by the warming hut. Is that the real name of the pond? Duck Soup Pond?
Duck Soup Pond. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I don't know if I'd want to swim in that, but, all right. That's a good name.
I'm swimming. But it was sure pretty to look at though, when you woke first thing in the morning.
How were the mosquitoes? Because I feel like lakes. Wow.
Nothing.
Yeah, it's like last time I was at Gold Lake, we were just getting mauled by mosquitoes.
Right.
Cool. And then how? So you spent 4 days on the trail up there, basically, as far as the Plumas section goes. Maybe it's 3.5 because you probably picked up the Lassen on that fourth day, I assume.
Yes, I think so. I think it was 4 days on the trail. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we ended up at Yellow Creek.
And why don't we tell the viewers a little bit more? You know, I think a lot of people are familiar with the Central Sierra. A lot of people have been going to the Eastern Sierra, but not a lot of people seem to go up to the Northern Sierra, which is totally unique and different than those regions, especially since it's a transition zone as it moves into the Cascades, and then you have the Basin Ranges further up. So you get this really interesting geology and kind of different types of forest as well.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. It definitely passes through some interesting country that changes. You kind of go from, high alpine to you'll pass through scrub. There's several different kind of terrains and not really biomes, I guess, but kind of like sub biomes, they're all part of the same ecosystem. You definitely pass through some different stuff than you see like in Tahoe and further south. I would say in a way, you're kind of almost pulling out of those big granite slab areas of the Sierra that you see closer to like the Rubicon Trail is known for. You're kind of pulling out of that in this section.
Yeah. And I think you start to see like more serpentine and other types of rocks that aren't as common in those big granite slab areas. Yeah. So day two, what are some cool things that you saw on the trail that day?
Day two, I don't have my map right in front of me, but day two, you start off from where we left, which is kind of, would almost be the beginning of the actual trail. You run into that little waterfall.
Warming hut. Is that kind of where you started that day in the PCT?
Yeah, we weren't too far. Yeah. It's between the warming hut and the PCT is where Duck Soup Pond is. So the first thing when we came off the little side trail that Duck Soup Pond was on, we hit the PCT. It was right there. And then you kind of squiggle around. You see that little waterfall coming down the hill. I would say day two, the highlight was, I got to look at my map. What's the name of that creek? It's a discovery point.
Cold Fire on here. Nelson Creek.
Yes. Nelson Creek. That is kick ass. And I cover that. I've got a really nice little drone shot. You can see that. Man, I wish there was a spot to camp there. We didn't look too hard, but boy, that is a pretty, pretty creek. Probably the prettiest creek we encountered the whole time. That was the highlight of day two for sure.
And so that was a placer gold mining spot. one of many, right? Worth millions of dollars, was discovered in the creek in the 1850s, et cetera, et cetera.
I think Harrison Flat was like the settlement of that area, I believe. Yeah. It was Harrison Flat.
Yeah, it had mining camps sprang up along its banks with names like Henpeck City, Fiddler's Flat, and Graveyard Flat, and Deadman's Bar are some of the little places that were there. I think this is all copied from the forest or whatever.
Yeah, we did venture off a little bit and try to find a place to set up, because even though it was early on the second day, you know, we weren't on a schedule. We're like, man, this is awesome if we could camp here. And there's still, you know, active mine sites there. There's signs pinned on trees. If you pull off the road, you know, it is public land. But the way that works, but don't dig in the ground or get caught.
Then some of those miners are a little sketchy and weird about their plots, you know, like they swear.
They're super protective of their claims. I had a friend of mine whose uncle and aunt used to do that up there, and they're a little batshit. Oh, pardon my language. Little batty about their mine claims.
Yeah. But
you know, if somebody's on it, just that's their land when they're there. You know what I mean? You can camp on a mine claim. You just can't defile that mine claim in any which way. And if somebody's there, that's their claim. They have a right to be there. So there are definitely active mine claims, and they're all through that whole section. You can see the signs on trees. Better to just not trespass, because you're borderline trespassing on at that point. But it's all through there.
Yeah, this is a bit of a digression, but there have you been over to the St. Louis Bridge, which is another beautiful creek? There's a big old, it's kind of in the vicinity, not too far from the Warming Hut. But it's a different route through there. That is an awesome region. And there are some spots over there that I think you can actually camp like right on the creek, which is almost a borderline river. If you get back up there, I'd recommend checking that out. There's some cool mining stuff over there, and there's some mining claims too. But really, really cool spot that I would recommend checking out. Cool. So back on the trail, Nelson Creek. Very cool.
Nelson Creek, super cool. The whole, what is that? The burn area, cold fire burn area. That's cold just, fire. You know, mile after mile of just sweeping vistas. That's a really cool area.
So I think you were up there a week before we were, maybe very close, because the fire last year, there was two separate fires. I'm trying to remember what they were called. I feel like one was called Bear Creek or Bear Something Fire, and then it merged with another fire, and it created that giant firestorm that blew through the Feather River Valley.
Oh, you're talking about closer up to Quincy?
It blew down the 70, exactly.
Yeah, that was 1 week after we were there.
Yeah, so that's when we were up there. We were leaving Labor Day weekend, right when the wind picked up and it just blew everything out of control. Do you know what in terms of the route has been impacted by that? I haven't kind of looked at the fire map and laid it over, but I think unfortunately a good chunk of the northern section of it got hit with that.
I don't know. I was watching some of the fires, at least around the Quincy area, and I know they were kind of encroaching. I don't think they made it, at least in regards to like the area south of Quincy. But beyond that, I don't know.
Cool. Well, not cool, but you know, it is what it is. I think one of the other, and so the discovery points that I have after that are Vista Point, Cold Fire, Feather River. And then you got some really cool drone footage from Little Volcano.
Yeah. So that's getting on to day three. So day two, we ended up at the Red Ridge Campground, which is an established site. It's off the paved road. And that was a great campsite, in my opinion. A lot of logging traffic up there. Actually, a guy that I used to sell trucks to, a customer of mine his trucks were just up and down the road from about 3 a.m. onward. I mean, they were just all night. Wow. But the river was awesome. So that's a great spot to camp. In my video there, that's kind of an example of those, you know, there was a guy in a Sprinter van who got stuck on the sandbar that I had to yank him out. So that was kind of an example of folks going out, not knowing where they can and can't take their vehicles. And yeah, I definitely pointed out, you know, if you've got a Sprinter van on pizza cutters, don't go onto a gravel bar.
Yeah. If you got a minivan or a Honda Accord, don't take it out to Usal Beach.
Okay? Yeah. Don't do that. Yeah. Seriously, don't do that. But yeah, so that was a great spot to stay. And then from there, yeah, we ventured up towards on day three, we went up, saw a little volcano. That was a really cool, really cool spot to check out. My wife was going to run up the top. She's pretty athletic, but she got partway up, heard a rattlesnake and turned back around. So caution for the snakes, I guess, on that trail. So there's the only snake we heard or saw. So from there, let me look here. Feather River, Little Volcano.
Is Little Volcano?
This was actually probably one of my favorite stretches of road.
So Little Volcano, where, like, the foundation, it's not a volcano at all, actually.
It's not.
Yeah. And I was curious about that because we're in that transition zone to the Cascades, but it's just a dolomite outcropping is what it says. Interesting. Okay.
Rock. Yep.
Yeah.
I would imagine it's pretty cool viewpoints up there, but yeah, we didn't, I'm kind of lazy and my wife didn't want to deal with the rattlesnakes by herself. So we don't have anything.
Next time.
Yeah. But that stretch also getting there, that's one of the narrow stretches where you're going to get some trail rash. There was a lot of, it was encroaching on the trail and scratchy, a lot of stuff hanging down. I think I said it even in the video, like that's, you always see these guys with their limb risers and I'm like, man, what's the point? There's a point. There's definitely a point. Maybe not when you're going to, you know, the grocery store, but when you're out on the trail, there's a time and a place for those things.
I know that's big with like the Ozark boys and stuff like that, and people on the East Coast that are riding tight trails. But I think you can get away with it out here. I mean,
yeah, you can get away without it.
Badge of honor, right?
Yeah, but when two or three of them whack your windshield pretty hard, it's like,
yeah,
it might be worth the investment. we'll see. But from there, heading up from that area up to like the Claremont Peak area,
mm-hmm.
that is one of the, that was probably in terms of just trail and just ride, that was probably my favorite section because it was just so pretty. All those, you know, you got a lot of the serpentine rock and the dolomite mm-hmm. rock outcroppings. I point out some of that stuff in my day three video, I think. And you can just see that's, you know, you'll come up over the top of a crest and it's just sweeping view.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really cool area. And the trail was kind of fun too. You know, there's one section where you really got to kind of, you know, give it a run for its money to get up to the top. I like that kind of stuff. So it was a really, and then when you're up at the top, before you get to the Claremont Peak area, I would say between Foundation Viewpoint and Claremont Peak, I mean, it's like a mystical, magical forest. You know, there's like mosses and like these gnarly trees that are kind of worn by the wind and the weather and it's, you know, all the rock. And it was really, really pretty, very pretty.
Yeah. Yeah. I think unfortunately this is some of the area that got hit with the fire. Here, I think they stopped it at Bucks Lake and they saved that, but it kind of hit this whole area really hard, which is a shame. Cause it is beautiful over there.
Yeah.
As far as like the trail outside of Poker Flat, for the most part, it sounds like you probably could drive a Subaru up there on most of it.
Yes. Most of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's that 1% that's going to, you know, the trail that's going to turn you around. And there are spots that will, like, for something that's low slung, I would say a high clearance two wheel drive with a, you know, a savvy driver could get through this whole trail. Yeah. It would be ideal to have a buddy with you or some kind of, you know, some way to recover yourself. Cause there is, you know, that 1% of the trail, not even 1%, you know, there's maybe cumulatively 100 feet of trail that will just stop you dead in your tracks. If you're not careful, it's not that much, but, you know, there was further up the trail. We encountered one spot after, Butt Valley Reservoir where we'd been going too long that day. We were all tired and we almost, you know, if I didn't have a drone to scout the trail ahead, I might have turned around and gone back to find somewhere and done it the next day. Yeah. And I'm in a pretty capable Jeep, you know what I mean? So, yeah, there's, for the most part, the Plumas Trail, I think just about any four wheel drive could do it. It's pretty light duty.
For sure. For sure. And I think that was the plan with a lot of these BDTs, and they kind of create those alternative routes on some of them, like Poker Flat. And I think there are some other ones if you get the little PDF that have like little side tracks. Did you do any of those by chance?
we were going to do, I was originally intending, there was like the Pellegrin. The only other one that probably would be a little bit more advanced is the Pellegrin Jeep Trail.
Which I hear is, you're going to get some pinstriping on that one from my friends.
Yeah. Yeah. Have done it. Which I'm okay with. I mean, that's why we got that thing, but you will for sure. It's got deep brush, that whole area. If you look, you know, if you just look at the offshoots, it's just brutal scrub that will just trash your paint job. I wanted to, but it would have just been too much for the day. We decided to forego that one for that trip.
Yeah. And then, so there's some other, I think you were talking about Claremont Peak. There is some other stuff. Where are we looking here? Give me one second. There's a bunch of mines. Good. Did you guys stop at Meadow Lake Valley Cemetery or check out Spanish Creek or Bean Hill Mine?
Spanish? No, I don't think we did. Like after like Foundation Viewpoint, Claremont Peak, we checked out like the Sugar Pine area that was burned out.
Except for like the stand of like a dozen trees, right?
Yeah. We continued on. Let's see here. Where were we? Yeah, because you got like Rock Creek.
Yep.
From there, so from there we stopped for the night at Meadow Place Campground is the actual like established campground. Mm-hmm. That's where we stopped for the night, except we didn't go to the campground. We went to the east and found a dispersed spot on the creek because the campground had people in it. And they were playing music and stuff like that. And we're just, you know, we're not out there to camp next to people. So there was some nice dispersed camping to be had on Meadow Valley Creek to the east of it.
Is that valley pretty nice out there? It's kind of a big flat area in that region, isn't it?
Beautiful. Yeah. I flew the drone up and over. If you were to camp in the actual campground, that's got views of a big meadow. And the creek is very picturesque and worth looking at. I mean, I'd say it's worth going there even if there's other people. Like it's a nice looking campground with, you know, a lot to offer. But there's also some good dispersed camping to be had right in the area.
Yeah. And so there's a lake nearby called Snake Lake. I would recommend going there.
Would not.
We went out there. No, we went out there because we were trying to find a place to camp. It's got a weird vibe to it, and it's just not I don't know, you know, it looks like some zombies would be stalking through the forest out there and just kind of a weird swampy lake. And we turned around and I think we ended up camping on the Feather River somewhere.
Yeah. I've had Snake Lake on my radar before to check out. So not worth it.
No, nothing. Yeah. I've heard Bucks Lake is good. I know that's a popular spot that does get a lot of people, but I've heard it's pretty nice.
I've heard of that.
That's to the west. Yeah. And then, so the route from there kind of meanders and it works its way down and then it drops down into the top of the Feather River Canyon on Highway 70 there. Did you guys make any stops through there? Cause you know, there's some
cool stuff over in that area. I would say definitely check out Butterfly. Yeah, the Butterfly Valley Botanical Area. I mean, scope that out. That's awesome. That was really cool. You know, they got
that's kind of off the trail, isn't it? A little bit. It's kind of a detour.
It's an alternate route. I think the guide calls it an alternate 4x4 route. Mm-hmm. I don't see what warranted 4x4 at all. I mean, I think a car could drive that. But it's apparently an alternate 4x4 route. It's definitely worth seeing. The botanical area was really, really cool. You know, you see the California pitcher plants and all that stuff, and there's a lot of wildlife out there. So it's kind of
Yeah. So for those that aren't from California, you want to explain what that California pitcher plant is?
Yeah, it's the Darling Tonia Californicus. It's a plant that kind of looks like a little pitcher, has a little lid on the top of it, and it has a sweet nectar in the bottom that draws insects into it, and it eats them. It digests them in its little fluid. So it's a carnivorous plant.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the – yeah, they're everywhere. And I think that's one of the cool things about the Northern Sierra. It's a little bit it doesn't have that kind of like desert dryness that you kind of get around Tahoe, where it just seems like other than a few creeks here and there, there's more lushness, there's more water, more moss, and you wildlife have those wildlife too. Yeah, for sure. You camped at the Red Bridge campground and you mentioned that there were trucks running all night over there.
Yep.
So yeah, on the 70, there's a number of great spots to camp on the 70, except instead of logging trucks. Have you ever camped on the 70 at all?
No.
Yeah. So you got the freight trains running through like four of them a night, you know, and they're like 2 miles long. My kids slept through it like nothing, but like 4 a.m, there was one that came through screeching for like 10 minutes, you know, and you're just like,
yeah, we had a spot on Spanish Creek that's near that, near the freight train lines.
Yeah.
That we were going to, we had it booked and reserved. We have a group of friends that likes the campground scene. So we were going to go, that was, I got to pick the campground. So I was like, let's go to that one. And
we went to that one
right there. Our reservation was canceled, fortunately. But that was on my radar to go check out. So, and I think the Google review says beautiful spot, but it's loud.
It's great to go swimming out and hang out during the day and go swimming and barbecue and kick back a couple of beers. But it's loud at night. You know, if you have problems with loud noises, that's not the spot. After that, really, it's not – there's not a whole lot more to the trail, basically, right? Like, I'm just looking at Google Maps. I'm guessing it's like maybe 20, 25 miles.
It depends on where you want to end. So if you want to carry it over, because we drove from there, from Meadow Valley Campground, all the way to Yellow Creek. And that was, if Yellow Creek wasn't such a spectacular place to end the day, that was too much for in one day for kids, for me, for my wife, for everybody. We were pretty worn out at that point. I mean, it was doable. We had daylight left over to set up camp, but it was a bit of a grind. If you're going to end it at Butte Valley, where I think is where a lot of people going south to north would end it, Butte Valley Reservoir.
Right past that, yeah.
Yeah, that's like where, if you're going to call it there, perfect place to end it. Pick a campground right there or something like that and end it there. But there's still more to see there. You know, there's the little town of Seneca or the gin mill. That's pretty cool little spot to check out. Just past the gin mill, there's some cool discovery points like the old mines and stuff like that. There's still some cabins standing. I think I point out one or two of those. And there's some good dispersed camping not far past Seneca. And established campgrounds. But when we were there, there was a lot of people, and we were not a lot of people. I mean, if I see two people, you know, camping within 100 feet, I'm like, that's too crowded. but you know, in hindsight, it would have been a good place to call it a day, because you know, there was a creek washing through and quiet neighbors and clean campsites. So there's some areas around that just past that Seneca gin mill that are, you know, decent camping. Perfect camping for me is nobody. But if you can deal with having some neighbors, it's great.
Cool. And then what was your trail traffic like once you got off of Poker Flat, other than kind of like, you know, the developed campgrounds and stuff? We're talking on the dirt on the BDT.
I don't think I saw anybody on the dirt.
Really?
Oh, wow. No, I take that back. So we saw one vehicle passing. So before we got, let me see, I'm looking at my map here. There's a point in my, so we're, before we got to Red Bridge, there's a big portion of the trail that heads back east over towards Long Valley, goes back up and around the north. I think in my video, I pointed out is there's a shortcut it shows up on the forestry map. It's like, oh, you can go right down the hill here and wind up at the Feather River. That's not a shortcut, it's a dead end. Right after that, I saw one vehicle heading the opposite direction. And I think that's in terms of not being on any of the small sections of paved road, I think that was it for the Plumas Trail.
Yeah. So, I mean, for all of you people that are complaining that you're going in places that are overran with people, you're just going to the wrong places. You know, like I've been to those places, you know, like sometimes we like to go out to Death Valley or wherever it is, but there's a lot of places in California with all 40 million of us here that you can still, you know, drive all day on dirt and not see anybody.
And I think if you get 1 mile from the paved road, most people have fallen off at that point. They're not venturing too far. A lot of people are just discovering camping at this, you know, in 2020 with all the craziness, there's nothing else to do. So they're not going to go too far. They're looking for those campgrounds or easy spots to turn off. That's right next to a creek. You know, that's like, they're looking for perfection within a mile from the paved road. You know, yeah. they hit a bump and their significant other's like, turn around, too crazy. Let's go back.
That's, you know? That's me. Not me, but that's my partner.
That's it.
We went to USOL and it was kind of like, find a camp spot. I'm not doing any more dirt. And I was like, okay, yeah. We'll park and I'll pop it.
My wife's awesome. She loves it as much as I do. She doesn't complain at all. My girls, they have a little bit of a bandwidth in terms of comfort, but even them, the dog, I'm very fortunate that they're not as into the driving as I am, but they're definitely, you know, they're troopers for sure. They're into it.
Yeah, that's rad. So I know you did the Lassen, you kind of did the Plumas and then did like what, 2/3 of the Lassen. We could perhaps talk about that a different day. But I think the nice thing about the California Backcountry Discovery Trails and what we've tried to do at Overland Trail Guides is try to link them together. So the Forest Service has Plumas, Lassen, and Modoc. And people have created like little connectors. So you can essentially go from the Oregon border all the way down to the 49. And then last summer we actually created the Tahoe Backcountry Discovery Trail. So you can get all the way down to El Dorado. And maybe this year we'll be able to do the El Dorado one. We have a route mapped out, but we got to go check it out. And then we created the Shasta Trinity. So now you can get over from Modoc and Lassen over to the Shasta Trinity, which will connect to Six Rivers and Mendocino. So you can just do like 1,000 miles up there now. Just keep going. There you go.
Yep. Yeah. No. Yeah. No. It's the Plumas segues into the Lassen perfectly. You know.
Yep.
And not to dive too deep into the Lassen or anything, but Yellow Creek is probably one of the nicest campgrounds I've ever been to. So if you have the fortitude to keep going and go all the way through the Plumas and end it at the start of the Lassen, that's an awesome campground. I mean, not to put it on blast.
It's a developed campground, or is it just dispersed campground?
It's developed. It's owned by the, I guess it used to be PG&E land that was recently bought back by the native tribe out there. The nation, you know, I think there's I talked to the camp host who was one of the Native Americans that was part of the nation. There's a few tribes that came together and purchased that land back.
Cool.
And the Humboldt Valley? My goodness. Like,
I've seen pictures of that. It looks amazing. It looks amazing.
Spectacular. I think I even said it in my video too. I don't know where my ancestors were when it was time to come out here and plant a flag somewhere. Like, why couldn't mine go plant their flag out there? You know what I mean? It's just absolutely paradise for me.
Yeah.
World-class trout fishery. Beautiful country. So to end the backcountry, the Plumas BDT, that's a great place to do it because you've got clean vault toilets, you've got running water, you've got, you know, a little trout fishery if you fly fish. Great ending point. And pretty smooth sailing to get out.
Yeah. Cool. So your wife pitched you on this idea. Did it live up to your expectations of terms of what you were expecting and the experience and everything like that?
Yeah, pretty much. I would say so. Yeah. In terms of, it was a little bit of adventure, you know, a little bit of pucker. There was, you know, nobody around except for really the only time we camped with other people nearby was at Red Bridge Campground, you know, they were a nice family. They just, you know, weren't super prepared for even being at an established campground. It was, yeah, absolutely. You can,
but you saved them, right? You pulled them out of it with their sprinter.
I winched them out. Yeah, I had to show off a little bit. I like backed my Jeep up into the river, you know, and like pulled them this way and then pulled them up out.
Yeah.
But even so, like, great family, had a little kid to play with my kids. I mean, the thing about the Plumas is you can get away from other people. Between Plumas and Lassen, a lot more, you start seeing a lot more people on Lassen. Even in some of the more remote sections of trail, we would encounter another vehicle going this way, or maybe, you know, if we stopped for a while, someone would catch up to us. There was a little bit, not a lot of that. For me, a lot of that is like one vehicle, right? I'm like, man, there's a lot of people out here. But we were seeing that on Lassen. On the Plumas, like virtually nobody. And I think that's because the trail is more rugged. Lassen, you can go 35, 40 miles an hour on a lot of sections.
Wow.
Plumas, you can forget about that. Like, it's, you know, loaded down like I am, I don't go fast really anyways, but it's slower going. It's a little bit more rugged. There's more rocks in the road. There's more water crossing. There's more ruts and things like that, and deadfall. The rangers are pretty good about pulling the deadfall off, but there's more overgrown. So I think a lot of that stuff, I think most people who are just starting out going camping for the first time, and they got their brand new shiny, you know, $50,000-$60,000 Jeep or Toyota, which, I mean, I'm guilty of, right? But you're not going headlong into the bushes straight off the dealership lot, you know what I mean? So a lot of that stuff contributes to keeping people out. So yeah, I'd say Plumas Trail is a trail that you can definitely get away from the masses, for sure.
Yeah. And so I kind of want to just sum this up, help me here a little bit, and some of the things that you can expect on this trail. So you're going to see a lot of mining history, remnants of old mines, ghost towns, some technical sections.
Cemeteries. Yeah. If you go through the optional areas like the Poker Flat, you can get, I guess it's technical, you know, for the overlanding community, it's moderate.
Yeah.
It's moderate. Yeah. It's not, you're not rock crawling, but there was one little section I didn't disconnect my sway bar, 'cause I was like, there's no need. Right. But we got a little, and we, you know, me and my wife were both like, whoa, and that was it, you know? So there's definitely some fun to be had. There's some rocks you can crawl over. There's optional routes. There's endless
swimming, swimming. And
there's, there's swimming. There's definitely swimming. We were next to water every night, and the only water we didn't get into was Duck Soup Pond, because it was kind of just muddy and reeds, and, you know, it wasn't something you could really wash up in. But we were able to wash up in in an alpine creek every night. So that can be had every night, moving sites every day, and on Plumas and Lassen, really.
Yep.
A lot of water.
So why should somebody do this trail if they're thinking about it?
You should do it just if you want to get away from people. I expected seeing more people. I was like, oh, this is an established route. I'm going to run into people. You know, that was my only apprehension about it, was I'm going onto a beaten path. And, even though it's kind of an established route, and we were there on the weekend, started on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, we saw virtually nobody. So
that is crazy. And if you know, I like that too, getting away from the crowds. I don't mind seeing a person or two, but not trail traffic jams.
Right.
If you want to go out with people, go over to Gold Lake. You know, there's tons of cars over there. If that is your thing and you want to go out with the bros or a group or whatever, or you want to be around people, that's the place to go. There's some trails over there that are going to be more technical too, if you want to push it a little.
Yeah, but Gold Lake 4x4 trails, you know, you can push it on that trail a little bit. There's a couple little, you know,
you got sections. Snake Lake up there and some other things.
So
if you want to take it to the next level and you got 37s on a Jeep or something, I think that's probably the place to go.
Yes, yeah, Snake Lake will give you a little bit of a good time for sure. There's a time and a place, right? Like, you know, not everybody wants to be a 2-day hike from the nearest cell phone reception. You know, there's to me is what kind of the adventure is, but there is an element of risk involved in that, right? You're a long walk from the nearest help.
Sonics, man. That's what I got. I always roll with a satellite phone now. Like, it's just,
I need to get one.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's silly that I don't have one. I went the route of like dual battery, winch, recovery gear, and all this stuff, but none of that's going to help me if I crack an oil pan on a rock. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
But there's that, right? So I'm not opposed to those more populated areas. I've got friends that prefer that versus, you know, digging a hole to poop. So there's a time and a place, right? But if you want to get away from it all and get away from people and really kind of adventure out into the, I wouldn't say unknown, but kind of, you know, just more remote wilderness areas, the Plumas Trail is one of the best I've seen for that, for sure.
Cool. Yeah, I'm going to have to go hit the rest of it for sure. And there are some other great places to explore out there too that aren't on the trail.
It's endless.
Yeah.
Virtually endless. You can go this way, you can go that way. It's the trail's a guideline, but there's a lot more to be had off of it.
Yeah. So this has been great having you on talking about the Plumas BDT. You actually have a series of videos on the Plumas as well as the Lassen. Where can people find those at?
Yeah. So my YouTube thing, it's Overland Family Man. I'm on Instagram as well. And I try to give you kind of a rough guide on my channel there. I'm not really in it for the viewers. For me, it's like my home movies, right? It's fun. It's fun to put them together and everything, but I think there's some decent information there that can
for sure.
Show you what to expect. You know, I try to point out some of the highlights, you know, at least what were highlights to me. But I also don't want to give away all the secrets either, right? There's still plenty for you to see outside of those videos that I'm not giving. I'm not telling you everything. There's a lot more out there. So that's kind of what my take on it is. And yeah, Overland Family Man on YouTube is where you can go to see the Plumas and a good section of the Lassen and some other stuff. You know, I have more content I just haven't had time to make yet.
Don't we all? I will say this, there are some other videos on the Plumas BDT. Yours is definitely like the most comprehensive. I think it does a really good job of kind of like capturing what you can expect on the trail. And then just also hitting a lot of those discovery points as well. So if you want to get a bit more granular and kind of, you know, see what is really on this trail, check those videos out. Like I said, Daniel's done a great job of kind of listing various locations, campsites, keeping some of the good stuff hidden. But it's probably the best resource that I've seen in terms of capturing that in a video format.
Thank you. Yeah, there's other guys that have done some videos. You can catch other little sections of it, you know, like the Pellegrine Jeep Trail too. There's a lot of videos on that one. So there is a lot of good content in the vicinity. But yeah, I just didn't really ever see anything that was kind of A to B. Here's kind of, you know, here's what's out there. But there is some great content.
Yeah. There's great content out there. And a lot of people run in the Poker Flat one too.
Tons of Poker Flat. Yeah.
What's your next adventure?
Since I'm not going to the woods with you this weekend, I'm not sure. We were talking about doing Death Valley.
We will both be in the same, in the same forest though, I guess just different locations.
Oh, gotcha. We've been talking about doing Death Valley in April. So, you know, see, we might go do that. We haven't done Death Valley yet.
It's a good one.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. And, I mean, we do a lot in Mendocino National Forest. I think this year we probably want to do more Lassen. We didn't finish. We ended Lassen up at Hat Creek because it was just, we found just such a perfect spot. It's in my last video. I think it's Lassen day 3, right on Hat Creek. You know, it's world-class trout fishery. We were all by ourselves. We had water. We had a big open campsite. We're like, let's just stay here for the end of our trip. So there's a lot more up there I want to explore. I think we'll probably
have you back on to talk about that one once you complete it. The Modoc one looks really interesting too. That one looks really rad.
Modoc looks pretty cool. That looks like you kind of get into some of that Oregon Trail territory out there, where you get into that a lot of the flat scrubland.
Yeah,
The high desert. I got a new awning for my Jeep for my birthday in December, so I'm a little bit more open to being unshaded now. I usually like to stay where I can get shade.
You ready to go to Death Valley?
Yeah, exactly. I think that was my wife's kind of like nudge, like, let's go to Death Valley. Here's an awning.
that is rad. Yeah, you got a good woman.
Yeah, here, actually, I'll introduce you. My Overland Family wife is here. Come say hi real quick. Okay. Ben, this is Ben, Overland Trail Guides.
Hi.
Hey, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. So that was
right. Dog's got the whole,
oh, here comes pebbles. The dog too.
She heard me say hello.
Anyways, yeah. So maybe that's what's in the forecast. I've got more stuff that I do. I've got some content with Dylan that I haven't finished yet. We went on a Christmas tree hunt in December.
Yeah.
You know, I do a lot in Mendocino. I definitely need to do more in the Sierras. Yeah, I need to revisit some of the areas I used to go to in the Sierras. I'm not taking this Jeep up on Fordyce or anything like that, but I'd like to do the Rubicon.
Let's get some video of that.
I'm not
fully loaded with a family.
Yeah, forget about my Jeep. That's Toyota country. That's not Jeep country. Unless you got way more Jeep than we got.
Yeah, for sure.
But like, you know, maybe we'll go do the Rubicon this year too. I've been wanting to, it's been, you know, eight, 10 years since I've
been. You're going to do the Rubicon, but you won't hit Fordyce?
Fordyce makes the Rubicon look like kindergarten.
I haven't done either. I do know that the Rubicon it's been kind of sanitized a lot. But yeah,
it was getting sanitized. You know, I think the last time I've been up there was probably 8 or 9 years ago, and it was already getting pretty sanitized.
Yeah.
Fordyce has only gotten worse.
Wow.
There's no sanitizing Fordyce. That thing will eat you alive. Yeah, it's pretty badass. But you know, Rubicon is, you know, I've got a Jeep that can do it. You know, I might tackle that one this year. Who knows? I don't know.
Cool.
World is my oyster.
There you go. Well, Dania, thanks for coming on. Hopefully we'll meet on the trail soon. And if you do that last one, let's get you back on and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And if you got any trips, you know, not to invite myself out, let me know. I'd be happy to tag along.
Yeah, we'll make it happen.
Right on, Ben.
All right, Daniel. Take care.
Thanks, buddy.
All right, y'all. Happy trails. This is Overland Trail Guides signing off.